There you go.
I'm sorry, it doesn't convert. So when we're talking about converting, we're either talking about converting to an idea or talking to converting with money. In terms of not-for-profits, it would be donations, and for-profit, it's the cash that you have coming in. I do internet marketing and social media marketing, internet marketing, where we actually market a product, and email list building is still the most effective way to get people to do things properly. That's not spamming. The main issue is getting people to open your email. And that's no easy task. I don't know how much email you get in your inbox. I get a lot, probably 400 or 500 emails into all of my accounts every day. So getting me to open an email is difficult. Part of it is reputation. So if you've sent me 10 emails in the last 6 months, and they've all had exceptional offers or really good information in them, then guess what? I open those ones. And the other thing is the catchy title. That's still...
But how do you?
The catchy ones.
How would you go about building an email list? Are there methods or various sites you can go to? Okay.
So does someone have building?
You have to collect on your own site for one thing, right? And that's one thing about services like MailChimp, and I've used Campaign Monitor, which is a competitor of MailChimp, just a different pricing model. Is they do make it really easy to have your own form, which is nice. Actual form on your website.
That's the place to start.
So MailChimp is an email campaign program.
Like Constant Contact?
Is it used?
Wired newsletters are sent out with MailChimp. So if you go to the Wired website and you give them your email address, you will then get an email, and that's all managed and done within a MailChimp system.
And this is a paid for service?
Yeah.
First 500 contacts are free.
Okay.
You obviously have a ownership list.
No. But Campaign Monitor is a different, there's another one called Campaign Monitor, and it's a paid for service. It's just a different paid
one. Right.
Okay. And Constant Contact is a similar model,
right,
that we use.
It's software as a service, right? So the other option to do your email list, and I talked to somebody, police museum. Use PHP email. Use PHP something to do your email.
PHP list, yeah.
Okay, so he's managing it in-house.
Does anyone use NetCommunity?
That's another one.
Was that? Just asking?
No. But there's lots.
But these all assume you already have a pretty decent set of users.
No.
These also help you build and find or grab people that of emails you already have and sort. Is it a sorting program or is it actually a collection of going out and finding?
One thing that always needs to get mentioned in this kind of discussion is that we are, as organizations in British Columbia, bound by certain regulations.
Yeah.
And we forget them. We ignore them conveniently a lot.
Yes.
But scouring your entire... your computer for every email address available actually violates the law. The people didn't give you their email address or contact information with that intention and all that. You've got to be careful. The problem is we don't bother. We're so excited about getting the word out about our things. And we just assume that people, of course, want it. And marketers that have been doing it for a long time recognize full well that the best way to get engagement in the long term is to have people opt in and not to just...
So this used to always be called permission-based marketing, right? Going back to prehistory days.
Exactly.
Which is like the 20th century.
Which conveniently enough, getting that permission avoids all the problems when it comes to protection of personal information and privacy. I'm just saying.
So a PHP list doesn't cost anything.
Doesn't cost anything, but you got to have somebody who's a gearhead that they can set it up for you.
So
But you can build forms on your own website and manage distribution. It's not the most convenient tool, but it's better than like Outlook. Right.
There's a question over here.
Do you get analytics from PHPList?
I'm sorry?
Do you get analytics, like open rates?
You can set that up. We haven't. We're sending people to web pages, so we're getting analytics in the end anyways. We can see if they're clicking on links.
But the question was, what is it?
Exactly.
Basically all it is, it's a service who will send out your emails and maintain the list. And in the case of constant contact, it'll also receive an opt-in and an opt-out.
So if you get an email to unsubscribe or something, you can safely that's part of what
it manages that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And good point here, the statistics.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it schedules for
it. It tells me who clicked through on the articles that are in my newsletter.
Oh, there's bounce backs, everything you need.
Manages bounce backs. Yeah.
But it is a standalone program. You can't, for example, install as a plugin for WordPress or another CMS.
No,
you have to have it apart from anything you're doing for a blog.
Yeah, it's. Web-based.
Okay.
Software as a service.
Yeah.
All right.
And it also schedules. MailChimp does this constant contact.
You schedule it whenever.
Okay.
I don't know. So does the
Okay.
They all have the same basic
functions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is there some problem with MailChimp? I mean, I think I remember this morning someone's like, what's up with MailChimp?
Yeah, but that was my question, because I've seen it, Mashable has reported on it, and I've linked back to it, and I understand that there's a need for it, and then
okay,
I think
so
it was somebody up front saying it's kind of like old school, and that's what Bonnie raised her hand, so not necessarily.
Okay.
And so I've always been curious about what this can actually do for a business, my business, anybody's business.
So
well, that's just the platform, though. So
right.
The
yeah.
content,
email component.
The marketing strategy is
right.
So to me, the I was saying to someone now, it's not so much the session got titled MailChimp, but really it's about how does your email marketing differ from your and you're obviously doing. I know about you from Twitter. I didn't even know you had a mailing list. So
yeah.
It would be interesting to know what you were doing differently and what was working. And yours as well. What you do differently by email versus because I agree with your assertion that email converts better.
Well, email converts better. More importantly, and we forget this, is that we've suddenly gotten to the idea that we need to create centers of community, and we're creating centers of community all over the place. Like people need to come to our site because it's comprehensive and
right.
Has all these neat things. It's difficult for one person to go and visit 30 different things.
Right.
Email has the beautiful, elegant advantage of coming to you.
Yeah.
And that's a luxury for some people.
Right. Given that Facebook is the most popular, if not, it's the most popular site on the internet, next to Google, I guess, right? You have a Facebook fan page?
We have a Facebook fan page. We use our Facebook page pretty aggressively.
So what's your relationship between your email marketing? That would be one of the questions that I, and your Facebook page. Because I think someone said, and this is, my question is based on the premise, someone said earlier that Twitter is for the moment, right? Like Twitter is just all about linking to a page, basically.
Cocktail?
But Facebook.
Cocktail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the one. I have it in my
And then I don't know if the other ones work.
Yeah, Twitter is the cocktail party. Facebook is the
barbecue.
Exactly.
Okay, so how does your Facebook fan page work with your email?
Only indirectly at this point. I mean, our Facebook, every once in a while, we will try and give opportunities for people to join the mailing list. The mailing list has the advantage of we can go long form with it. We don't have to be short, bite-sized pieces. And it appeals in some ways to a different demographic. I mean, we've converted a lot of our mailing of people. Now, there's old school, right? Sending a real
snail mail?
Right. Snail mail.
Yeah.
Wow. Sending paper, which for a certain demographic
right.
is still the most authoritative. They're not interested in convenience. They're interested in authority. And a piece of paper printed nicely still has an authority that an email doesn't have.
You still do it?
I still print 4x6 shots.
So Knowledge Network, 80% of our fundraising is DM.
Are you doing your fundraising through email as well?
We will be.
Okay, so you don't have a comparison rate.
Yeah.
Because that would be interesting as well.
We've got some. We even got permission. One of the largest email lists. So we went to NetChange Week in Toronto, and we're sort of singled out as the largest organization that wasn't national, like David Suzuki Foundation, that had the biggest list in the room. And yet again, maybe 15% of our revenue is through the web versus 75 on direct mail. Mm-hmm. Most of our acquisition for email lists comes from direct mail, right? Like, you know, a few people on the web versus every one of our mailing pieces says, go to ugm.ca instead, because you'll save us a ton of money. And also, please give us your email address because this will be a better relationship in the future.
So that, how do you do that? You in the direct
mail?
Well,
in that, like, you respond.
Yeah.
You give us your phone number and other things, but give us your email address as well. There, I can tell you by source the response rates, but it's an incredibly valuable way of moving people over to the email. And the reason you've heard of MailChimp is that if you say the reputation of Constant Contact versus MailChimp, like, hate, love... for user interface, for like experience, for the way they treat the customer, it's sort of the bad rep. And a lot of the growth of MailChimp has been like it's exponential the last 3 years because it's so simple. People love using it.
It's like the Eventbrite.
Yeah, exactly. We pay half a cent per email. Right?
Yeah.
Like half a cent per email versus over $1 for every piece of mail. So and people donate much higher amounts on the email.
And that's what it would break down, I guess.
Pardon? How big is your contact?
Over 11,000.
Email?
Yep.
So it works out to be about a half cent a contact? Is that what you kind
of... Yeah, well, that's what they... unless you do a monthly fee, which I love the like, per cent fee,
yeah.
MailChimp charges you, depending on like how many credits you want to buy. It's really simple,
yeah.
Right? So like, it, like, it's all paid for every time you send out 5,000 emails, 1,000 emails, right?
So here's a question actually for the two of you, since the two of you are close together and we're both involved in suitably large organizations and have resources a little beyond my little guy.
We're pretty smug about it.
I can tell.
You've got batons on your side, don't you?
We do have. We have batons and handcuffs on our side.
Tasers, yes.
Tasers, yes.
Oh.
Pepper spray. Anyways, perhaps a few words about... I mean, this is with MailChimp or some of these tools. We're talking about pure broadcast. How do your organizations segment those big broadcasts? Number one, like, are you actually doing CRM stuff to narrow down your focus a little bit so that you know that you're targeting a little bit more? Or do you really just send one big massive thing out to 18,000 people?
Very good question.
Yeah.
That's kind of like early best practices. We talk about that constantly. Funny that you mentioned both of us.
So, let's start with what you're actually doing, and then what do you want to do?
The great thing about MailChimp, it'll tell you the engagement rates. I've gone so far because I love MailChimp, because they integrate. I know when people not only click, but if they give an amount, and so we can segment by those people that donate certain amounts. So, I've made our sort of good list, bad list, where we want to have more touch points, whereas we're more sensitive. Because direct mail, we just like mail everyone, right? Because it's hard for them to unsubscribe in the real life, right? But in emails, it is so easy, right? So I sort of segment by people I don't think are as likely to walk away versus the sensitive. We'll do it a few fewer times. That's the practical way. The more I wish I can do it, doesn't necessarily suit our organization, is that I've linked it in with... other social profile information, so I know if someone's on Facebook. I know, Chris is, you've told me through Facebook you're only going to say your gender, so I've sorted people, like, we can sort people that way, but we can't really get to the point where we can, where it really matters to send a specific communication and be like, hey guys, it's Mother's Day, just donate to UGM. Like, we can't really make the clear leap to that.
Yeah.
So, like, we have that ability, but we've never really executed, whereas smaller organizations have much more ability to
Do you use things like we use? We're starting to use Civi CRM now, for example, to use our relation management stuff. You can pull so much out. That's open source software, by the way. It plugs in nicely with Drupal and with Joomla. You use either of those? So
what is it again,
Jeff? Civi CRM. So Civic RM.
Okay.
And it stands alone. It's a web-based platform. Yeah. And you use it to manage your membership. Base if you want, you can use contributions, events, there's a lot of different things. And it stands or plugs into Drupal or Joomla. Drupal better than Joomla. We're looking at it, we're not using it yet. But Eli.
So my feeling on segmentation is it is easy to segment in the email channel. It is really, really easy, and I have had at times up to 50 different sub-segments across the whole world. But the real challenge is, you know, large or small organizations, is the more you segment, the more communications you need to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is like, I could write 15 different versions of every email campaign I do out. Mm-hmm. Talk, because I know, like, this person clicked on all the action alerts about critters. This one was only interested in climate policy. Like, I can go very, very deep, and we simply don't have the capacity, and we haven't been able to make the case that actually makes enough of a difference on what we raise to segment out to that level. So most of my segmentation right now of the list of 75 real email addresses that actually get received they're segmented more not by what the message is, but mostly it's like, well, someone really wants to send out an email blast about their particular campaign, and I just sent something out last week, and I don't want to send it to everyone again. So then I'll send like little targeted pieces of communication. But mostly I just send something twice a month to 75,000 people. That's it, one big list.
Twice a month?
So that's the next, I was going to ask you about frequency.
And I'd love to go in about that.
Because you Twitter like crazy. Just Foundation Twitter is like crazy. I get it all the time. It's great. I love it.
They'd have 5 subscribers if they sent mail that frequently.
Right.
And
also
then what about can somebody speak to you a little bit about the nature of the content, like the headlines and the short articles, or how, like the quantity of information?
I actually have a piece on that one as well. We used to send out real email newsletters. Here's 6 topics. Here's a table of contents, all that kind of stuff. No one clicked on anything. I think they just got paralyzed by, like, what are the choices? Like, if you guys can't tell me what's important, then I don't think it's that important either. So we have moved. This is based on what the Obama campaign did, and we talked about it for 2.5 years and finally actually got around to it, which is, we don't send email newsletters anymore. It's part of why we went from monthly to twice a month, is so we could actually meet some of the internal needs. But now it's only, every single email we send out is modeled on a fundraising appeal. So even if we're telling you to, we want you to click on here and like do this workplace engagement project, we're only asking you one thing, and then we ask you that 3 to 4 times in the email. Mission accomplished. We went from a 2% click-through rate to 8% in like 6 months. Lesson learned for us, no one likes email newsletters. Like, they seem to only exist probably for the organizations themselves to, you know, placate all the players in house.
But is that ask framed in an article of some kind, or is it just an ask?
It's usually, there's not usually a very complicated story around it. Usually it's like, you know, here's this thing, we think this thing is important, you would really like this thing, do this thing, have I mentioned this thing? And that would be link 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
The sales letter?
Yeah, it is ultimately a sales thing. We're selling them on, in some cases, public engagement. It could be like, hey, enter this contest, but it's all really about selling one thing at a time.
So you're saying 2% click-through. And what you've basically done is you've just repeated yourself 10 times in order to get your 8% click-through, is that?
No,
is that
sorry,
for
you. Sorry, when I'm talking about click-through rate, what I'm typically, and I think most email clients will generally agree on this, is you're just saying, was any link within this email click? If yes, that email is counted as a conversion.
Oh.
Different counts,
oh,
because
I have specific links.
Places.
I know which links were clicked to.
Yes, and I'm adding all of those together, those links. I've actually radically reduced the number of links per email newsletter. There used to be 30, and now I'm down to 4.
Okay, so the 2% that you were getting on those 30 has now become 8% on your target.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, it used to be 2% of people who opened an email would touch any, they wouldn't, like, only, they would click one link, or maybe 10, doesn't matter, it's all the same to me.
Okay.
And now it's, I'll get up to 8% of people clicking any link within the newsletter.
So it becomes, it's almost like there was an information overload, like people
Open
the email, and it's like, I don't have time to deal with this right now. I
radically reduced, the amount of work to actually write those emails. The old ones, to write them and delay them out, were impossible, partially because suddenly I had to make, like, 4 different departments within the organization happy with that email because they all had a bit in it, and there was the editing process back and forth was was onerous, and now I only have one internal client I need to make happy with.
Okay. So another, sorry, mm-hmm. on the same topic, I mean, what about images in email? Because of course, Twitter, everything is a link, so you have a tweet pic, and if your tweet is boring, I'm not even gonna click on it. In email, you know, there's rich text, and I hate rich text email, but I completely recognize the effectiveness rate in conversion it has. I throw up to me, everybody would still be sending plain text messages. So my favorite email list is the Patagonia mailing list, and that's partly because they have beautiful photography of beautiful locations. Where, you know, and I wonder about the role that you found the images and the...
I've done no testing on that. I defer to the group on that one.
The big boys send text. The guys that, you know, regularly make $100,000 to, you know, $500,000 on selling How to Get Rich on the Internet and all of those other ones,
right.
They send text. That's
all.
Spam
at this point. We're talking about effectively.
It's worth testing.
Spam is... I don't think... No, it's not spam to someone who's...
You can
call
us an email.
No.
I'm not actually that interested in Viagra, so I don't really count those as email. I don't know.
What about
okay.
other people here? Do you guys use images?
We're in that
sphere. Do you use images?
For us, we the only image we use is our logo. And again, it's a branding opportunity. Otherwise, we keep it just text. There might be a little bit of formatting to it. I mean, we do go rich text because we want to have a little bit of control over how it looks, but not too much, just so that it's polished. But the logo, that's the important thing for us, is bringing it back to our brand. So that people are aware, oh, this is an email from the...
Do you do that to avoid, like problems with the send or upload time? Or
none of those things. It's just, it keeps it light for all the people that are still light in the world. And mm-hmm. we have a pretty old, you know, some of our stakeholders are pretty old. They've just figured out email. So, you know, they're probably on dial-up in the kootenai somewhere.
You have to distill the message down to what you want them to know and what you want them to do. So, if you've got a lot of pretty photos, that's cool. And if that's convert, and that converts, that's okay. I'm somebody who wanders off with pretty pictures and whatever, and I get distracted. If you wanted me to send money, I want you to give me the message, why? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? And I'll make a decision.
Sure.
And that truly is what you get down to. If you start giving people too many messages, and I was just on a webinar on Friday, and now three choices is too many, because apparently people on the internet, when you get there, if you give them three choices, that's one too many.
Zero, one, or zero.
Yeah, no, you give them a choice.
That's an old binary thing, right?
Yeah.
You're either, life is full of ones and life is full of zeros.
Okay, but if you look at the latest WordPress premium, they have those beautiful three things at the bottom and
right.
the graphics at the top. This guy says, if you want it to convert, then you have the message out there, you make the message, depending on what you're selling. If you're selling Viagra, there's a style, or, you know, get rich quick or whatever, there's a style to that. But the process is the same. It's selling. You're just selling with a different message. But so then now they're saying, just get to the message.
Yeah. Sorry, I think one of the joys of working in this online sphere is as much as we have best practices, we also have the ability to test things cheaply and quickly in a way that would just blow your mind. So, So an example of that is, so we can say, does text work for my audience, or do rich, HTML emails work for my audience? And what works for one organization does not actually work for all others. So a recent example is, best practice as says over and over again, make your donate button big, red, shiny, like make it stick out. And so recently at the Suzuki Foundation, we did an A/B test, and we had version A, big, red, shiny, and version B, just standard little gray text link. And for us, at this time, the text link is actually doing better for us than the big red shiny.
It's not supposed to be red, Alfred Hitchcock.
He mentioned A/B testing sooner than segmentation. Like creative use of time has been A/B testing, and thanks to like MailChimp being incredibly easy, like group A gets this content in the email. That's a lot more work for us. But like, you know, one thing getting to open, we were able to test, you know, image versus no image, and like if you want it to seem like an Outlook email, well, you know intuitively which one it should be, right? Like, I know what seems like a brand and what seems like it's from our president kind of thing. For instance, for a nonprofit, if it looks more like a written letter, it will pass through. And the A/B testing laws are from direct mail, except they don't get to say, here's a portion of the audience, now let's spend the rest of the audience, the good one. They just go, oh, we learned that for next year, right? So email is incredibly valuable for the fact that we just like hit the gun with the winner, right? So definitely A/B testing, best use of time.
It is actually, it's ridiculously easy, and and I don't do enough of it, but it is actually, it's the first thing I agree that needs to happen in any email campaign. If you are going to hit more than like 1,000 people, it's time to like look at that.
I'll tell you how I donated to UGM. And that was John Chow sent me an email. So, he's one of those people that I open his email list. So when was that? 2 years ago? It was quite a while ago.
Yep.
So he sent an email and said, you know, he grew up on the west of the east. So it was a good sales letter. I mean, he knows how to write a sales letter. And there wasn't a contest that year. There was just give.
Yep.
And I gave what he told me to give. Right, which was $25. And then the second year was it 6 months? He matched. But that wasn't the reason that I gave. I just, because John told me, and I pay attention to what he does. So I find it real interesting, wondering if anybody else has tried that with a celebrity or having someone, a joint venture partner, send out an email on your behalf.
If you want to talk about open rate, like for me to get it, like for me, like say you allowed us to have your email address, like 2% of the time we'd probably get you to do something. But if we said through your social network, you know, that's the personal fundraising capacity, right? And just it's amazing the behavior difference, right, between us doing an extension to you versus directly to you.
Sorry, I wouldn't open yours.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I open John's.
Yeah.
Even if I knew what it was about when I. So I thought it was very, very interesting, and I thought I would bring it up.
But that brings a good point. What makes you want to open John? What is it about his?
Well, I trust him. Because when I open his emails, we have a trusted relationship because he doesn't, well, okay. I say he doesn't spam me. Some people would call it spam, but there's information that I get from each of those emails. Oh, there's some reason for me to open it up.
So he has an intelligent reason.
So why else would you open it up?
I was going to say, for one person, you know, like you, that's wildly motivating, you know, knowing a little bit about John. They will start to trash if ever they show up. I mean, because one person's authority is another person's, you know, not. You know, that said, if David Suzuki is signed an email to me, man, that would be motivating. I mean, that's the advantage of your organization.
Yeah.
You've got a guy that everyone knows, most of us really like, and he's very persuasive.
So I would want to make sure that he had some personalization, that it wasn't somebody in the organization, and not just him anyone else.
Yeah.
So if I thought that, I don't expect him to be the one pushing the button, but if you could demonstrate to me that we had some kind of a relationship, besides every once in a while
you need to buy that personal email. Because, yeah, the first time I got the email in via whatever that big music thing was, LiveEarth,
okay.
And it said, from Al Gore. It's like, what?
Yeah.
But the fifth time I got that Al Gore one, I'm not opening anymore, actually, because I don't buy that connection. There was a point where that uniqueness did, like, stop working for me.
How about anybody else? Are there people that you open the email from no matter what, besides your mother?
Well, it's a trained response. The more you get the same email from a person with that same message over and over, obviously, right, it's familiar breeds contempt.
Well, there was also, that relates to part of an earlier conversation about Twitter and Facebook and having a personality to your social marketing aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, the email has the same thing, you know. To me, the Suzuki Foundation very much embodies, you know, Dave's personality. Whereas there are companies that haven't gotten that yet. So, you know, I did an interview, this company had just started up a Twitter account, they were talking, somebody had complained to them on their Twitter account. They said, oh, we want to help, send an email to customer service at, and it's like, okay. You just, like, presumably they're complaining because they probably already tried to reach customer service, right? Send an email to me at would have been a much better response, right? Because it's like, we've
personalized it.
So, email marketing with personality, I think, is much more, much more effective.
It's kind of like this, kind of like this.
But as was said up here, you know, it can be off-putting to the wrong person.
Well, you know, you test send your organization name, send your president's name kind of thing, right? An email from Bill versus an email from Union Gospel Mission Reactive.
Right. You had, there was some question here too a while ago.
It was that's another question or comment?
Well, I just say as well, this idea that we're deleting, John Chow. We're deleting John Chow's emails, one over here and another person over here. I think it just speaks to the strategy behind the list building in the first place, right? Like, clearly he took all the emails from his he ever sent, or you signed up for something 10 years ago and he hasn't cultivated you properly, or something like that. So I think that when we're thinking about these things, the important thing is to really be strategic in our list building and figuring out who it is we're attracting and why we're attracting them, and are we going to be able to give them what we seem to be promising when they first sign up do our petition kind of thing.
How many people regularly unsubscribe?
Oh, all the time.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Could we also get a show of hands on how many people get 100 emails a day, 50 emails a day, 200? I'm just very interested.
All right, how many people get about 50 a day average?
50.
Over 100?
50 to 100.
See, I think there's a point.
Less than 30?
Is this daily or
daily?
Average.
On average.
I mean, there's a point of saturation, like Twitter followers or anything else. After a while, you just stop, and you either start to delete them or you let them pile up day in and day out. I would imagine. I don't get 200 a day. But I can imagine if I were faced with 200 a day, after a while, I either stop looking, or after a couple of times, if I remember that person's email content, I would just automatically delete it. Or unsubscribe, because a lot of times I get things every week and I finally say, I don't have the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is the first element that caused me to say, I got to unsubscribe because I know what I'm going to get next week and the week after.
Yeah.
And I'm really actually curious about that frequency issue. You know, when the Suzuki Foundation doubled up their frequency from the ones to the two, we saw a 50% increase in our unsubscribe rate. So it had a real impact.
Right.
It also had a real impact on the actual click-through rate in a real positive way. So at some level, that frequency that I'm in your face so I don't forget you, like that having that regular relationship has been really beneficial in some way, but it's also like really spiked up the unsubscribe rate. So right now, I don't know which one is like the poison pill I need to swallow, but there's impacts either way.
Yeah. Well, and that's the nice thing about having a variety of tools accessible to us, right? Email, for my personal philosophy, is an occasional reminder. It's not meant to be a regular source of contact. It's not meant for my organization to be a regular part of your life. Mm-hmm. If I want to be a regular part of your life, I'm going to come to you in other places like Facebook.
Or Twitter.
Or Twitter.
You can follow their feed,
but,
right?
But let's be honest, for the vast majority of human beings in the world, they're not on Twitter.
Yeah.
And won't likely be on Twitter anytime soon. I'm sorry if that's heresy for some of you. You know, and truth be told, as I said in my previous session, most people don't know anything about Twitter and don't even care about Facebook unless they're playing Farmville. But that Facebook is, then that's the subversive thing for us as organizations with Facebook, is that Facebook, we're inserting ourselves into their life, into their social life, when their barriers are down. You know, in a place that they visit all the time, they feel like they kick sometimes a little too down. But you know, this is some place where they're not, you know, wearing all of their armor and all their protection and weeding the way that you weed with an email box. You know, you know, Facebook, that's the place you go to relax. And if you can get a message out through that, you know, on a regular basis.
Chris,
you, yeah.
I just got to ask one thing before I forget, and it's on that related subject. When you said most people will never be on Twitter anytime soon,
yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off, but do you think that that's in direct proportion to a lot of companies that don't allow their employees to tweet or Facebook during work? Is there a particular reason you think that
no.
so many people aren't on it?
I think it's because the people in this room are wired differently than the general public, and we forget that. We forget that our audience often isn't like us. We, you know, most of us in this room are early adopters. Most of us are technologically savvy. If you actually look at the broad spectrum of people in this on this planet that are possible future people to be involved in our organizations, they're not like us. But we always make the assumption that they are. And so if we're there, they're going to be there too. Usage rates on Twitter are horrendously low, really, when it comes down to it. That said, it has a different value because those are highly influential people, those are early adopters, they are broadcasters in other spheres of their lives. But if you're just doing marketing on Twitter, you're going to miss it. 90% plus the population, and probably always are. Right? You know, just reality check.
Unless you're going for early adopters.
Unless you're
yeah,
just going for early
exactly
adopters.
The, yeah.
But
the niche market.
Most of us can't make, you know, couldn't make a long-term business case for our nonprofits relying on early adopters.
I'm wondering how many people have used Facebook effectively for donations, for donations, any kind of donations?
We probably used it effectively, but it didn't work out to donations.
What's this one?
No, I mean, one-to-one. You know, we had a Facebook, we asked for whatever.
And it converted to a donation form.
Yeah.
Can we hear what
no,
she's
I'm just, yeah.
Well, I was the social media strategist for the Real News Network last year out of Toronto. And
Real News, E-E-L?
The Real News,
R-E-A-L.
Okay.
Yeah, Real News Network. And I think we have like 5,000 fans on Facebook. Really dedicated focus group, and there was just recently during the G20 events, one of our reporters was injured, and we sent out a big message about that, and unfortunately solicited donations through that event, and Facebook was how it spread virally.
Wow.
Right away, and then boom, we raised $87,000.
Oh, nice.
So injure an employee.
it's how mainstream media works, unfortunately. I mean, it's really bad, but it's true.
And there
was that just with the URL to the donate page? Because it, you can't use causes really in Canada anymore because it doesn't. There's no process of donations, right? Yeah. No. It was basically linking up to the page. I mean, the Real News Network only uses social media and email marketing to.
And it's been as opposed to Facebook causes, which is
yeah. No, it was through just a trend link.
Well, after the end of May, it used to be if you're a nonprofit or charity in Canada, you could get a Facebook cause page and they could process your donations. So we going to put some, but then Canada Helps said they won't no longer process donations from Facebook causes in Canada. So there's not much point in putting a lot of effort into causes if it's not going to convert into dollars.
Question, comment?
I was just going to mention something too. On terms of Twitter, there are strange niche groups you'd never know.
Hey,
opera people are nuts about Twitter. And for us, we have one night a week where we do performance documentaries. And so it's strange that certain little subcultures get really on board.
Without a doubt, I mean, as my session earlier was about you know, finding and building tribes, and recognizing that for a lot of us, it's a poor use of our limited resources to
just
create a tribe, you know, one-on-one, and build a community, when there's already great communities out there that we can tap into, and we can suck that whole community into what we're doing. So yeah, I mean, that's exactly. Twitter can be a great contact point for some of those, but social media people, we like to think that we're ahead of the curve, but really, maybe we're not going in quite the same direction as everybody else. I want to make sure that social media isn't being oversold.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it comes down to, and we have this tendency to oversell ourselves. Although, I think Twitter's awesome, right? We've got, you know, I hate bragging about numbers, but we have the second largest Twitter following of any museum in Canada, a tiny museum in the downtown east side. And that's organic. That's not from, like, massive
e-blasts and
e-blasts. You know, that's from letting people know that we exist and getting enough retweets and having enough interesting content, people actually come to us. that's kind of an honor. That's really
how
cool.
Many is that?
How many is that? That's 2,500, 2,600 right now.
Awesome.
Built again organically, so it's not the 10 or 20, 30, 50,000.
Well, but it's relative to your size. So you see, how many visits a week or a month? Or
that's exactly. I mean, my visitorship in a year is 21,000 visitors last year.
Right.
So when you include online contacts, I mean, that's the cool thing for us is that it's this great multiplier. Our influence is big, even if our walk-in isn't huge. That said, we've done specific events, enough specific events to be able to measure real-life impact of some of these things. You know, let's do a Twitter-only event. People won't hear about it through anything other than this one channel.
Right.
How many people show up? Wow, 80 people just showed up. And they bought stuff, and that was real revenue. And as a result of conversations that evening, we booked this, and we booked this, and we booked this. I can attribute probably 5 or 6% of my total revenue last year to strictly online sources. Now, that doesn't mean that I got that money online, but it means that through the marketing we did online, I can directly attribute that. Now, there's all the indirect attribution, too, where it was one of, you know, it was one influencer out of 4 or 5 that they saw us on Twitter. Yeah.
But that's excellent to be able to do. I mean, ultimately, you're a meat space place, right?
Exactly. We're brick and mortar. We need people to come through our doors to stay alive. We're self-funded, right? So you got to pay admission, otherwise we close down.
Right.
So.
Does anybody have any last-minute specific questions or comments? That we're nearing the end, your last couple of minutes.
Any other strategies for email list building?
Anybody? Yes.
Petition. A well-timed, sincere petition that's going to speak to people and that'll go viral that you partner with other organizations on was enormous for my organization.
This G20 event is almost a form of petition, right?
It's sure, yeah. Like a crisis opportunity.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, I just to go back to the earlier comment about privacy laws, like if you're harvesting emails off a petition, unless it's clearly stated.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, and make it clear. You want to continue to receive and it should be consistent with your mission. Yeah.
Anything else we haven't covered that anybody wants to throw out there before we wrap up?
Answer in 30 seconds?
Well, one minute.
We know when we send an email, at what time they donate. And that's kind of, if you do great integration, you can find that. You mentioned how email is more of a reminder. It truly is for us. You know, keeping it short means that I've seen people respond to an email with a donation within a minute of me sending it. And it's like, what? Like, you didn't even have time to really visually take that in. If you hit that donate button that quickly and processed your donation, like, that's like NASCAR speed.
It's powerful.
Right? And so it was like, you know what? This was for them an Outlook reminder to donate, because most of our donors are on Shaw, Telus, Hotmail, and then Outlook. Right? They don't use the Gmail, which, like, and again, that's, I'm mystified with using those, like, email clients. But yeah, they don't behave at all like me, and for some reason they don't really care about our emails, except it's a great reminder for them to just hit the donate.
Well, thanks guys for coming. I think there's a wrap up at 3:30 in the main auditorium. Thanks everybody for your comments.